Baseball is baseball worldwide. I can guarantee the Albert Pujols 700th home run will resonate and will be a story when we get there. We're not jumping the gun. No one's counting homers before they hatch. But I'm here for it, and I've been here for it all season long. Though I will admit, there were times when I wondered if we were going to see a surge like this and going to see the Albert Pujols that built his Hall of Fame career on being a slugger. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Glad to hear from those of you who enjoyed that interview with Katie Wu in Chicago. Man, she's like a Cardinals encyclopedia and very impressive. And the fact that she was live with us at 1:20 from Wrigley Field after covering the game between the Cardinals and the Cubs, and home run number 693 from Albert Pujols. He is closing in on 700, and I will count that among the major milestones that I've ever watched. And I know Barry Bonds is the all-time home run king. I get it. He did, in fact, eclipse 700, though honestly, I don't remember it. I know I watched it, and I do remember the season in which he set the new single season mark, so that I remember. I remember very clearly the summer of the home run chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, but for some reason, I don't remember. I think because it was so shrouded in controversy, him when he was passing all of the other home run leaders and ending up on top before he retired. He was so beloved, is so beloved in San Francisco, but outside of San Francisco, many people would try to argue that Barry Bonds is not the home run king. Now he is, because the record books say that he is. And I'll give you my theory and my opinion on the steroids era and the home runs, the inflated records. We don't know how many pitchers were using performance-enhancing drugs. We don't know how many pitchers had a few extra miles on their fastballs, or how many pitchers were able to recover more quickly from injury. So as much as I won't say you, although I meant you collectively, would like to point at these massive muscles that Bonds developed and how he all of a sudden could mash the ball, I get it. He wasn't the same player at the end that he was, that skinny, fast, flexible guy at the beginning when he started with the Pirates. But how many pitchers did he face that were juicing? Maybe he would have hit more home runs off those pitchers if they weren't using PEDs. So there's no way to pull the hitting stats out, not to mention there's plenty of guys using that were never caught and were never exposed. I know it's easy to pick on Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. They were the poster kids for the steroids era, but they weren't the only ones, and there were far more who were juicing that we'll never know about. So yes, Barry Bonds is the home run king. And I do remember, again, his single season record, his single season mark. I remember the consternation about him chasing the record and passing Hank Aaron. But I don't actually remember the moment that he did it. I will remember Albert Pujols and 700 when we get there. Now at 693, it's happening. It's happening in the summer of 2022. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're asking you, and you are responding, what is an impressive, unforgettable, memorable sports milestone that you are so proud you were able to witness? It doesn't have to be in person, but I will tell you one I saw in person. First ever Super Bowl to go into overtime, largest comeback in Super Bowl history, from down 28-3 to a Patriots win in overtime against the Falcons. I was there. It was still stunning, even though I was watching it in person, and I still almost can't believe it happened today. The only Super Bowl I've ever attended, and it just so happened to be the only one that ever went to overtime. So that one to witness in person was pretty damn amazing. The reaction inside NRG Stadium, I mean, every emotion you could possibly imagine. So that was one I witnessed in person. But there are many more that I've seen or that I've watched, that I've talked about, that weren't in person, and yet they resonate with me. So I don't want to mention any more. I want you all to share your memorable milestones with me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And a lot of you are already weighing in, so we're going to get to those. Plus, your number to reach us here toll-free, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Drew Smiley throws a pitch up high, actually, that Albert Pujols was able to clobber, and he becomes yet the next man up to surrender a home run in Pujols' Hall of Fame career.
If he swings, great. I know he's very aggressive. If not, you know, it's a ball, and we can come back to a different pitch next. But, I mean, he's the machine for a reason.
He is the machine for a reason. So it refers to his nickname. Drew Smiley gave up one run. But I suppose if you have to give up one run, why not be part of that Albert Pujols march to history? 449 different pitchers, a record he now shares with Barry Bonds. Homers off of 449 different pitchers. Wowzers. Seems like every time Tom Brady steps on the field these days, he sets another record or eclipses another record. And it's partly longevity. I mean, just the fact that he can still play as effectively as he can at his age. And you could say the same thing about Albert Pujols. Obviously, he's one of the greatest hitters in modern baseball history. But the fact that he's still able to do it at 42 years old means that these opportunities are afforded to him. Health is a big part of it. Taking care of your body and then adjusting. Were you guys watching the game in the cornfield in Iowa, the Field of Dreams game? And we had, what's his name? I could see his face in my head. The first baseman for the Reds. Oh my gosh. Votto. Yes. Joey Votto. Joey Votto was mic'd up. Sorry, Joey. And he was talking about the way that baseball has changed and the fact that he's been in the game for so long. He remembers the last kind of era of pitchers. And he was talking to John Smoltz when he was mic'd up, and he mentioned Smoltz and Tom Glavine and others who not only were able to pitch a variety of pitches, they could throw different pitches, but they could also locate with such incredible precision. Now, though, it's about the fastball, and it's about the number of pitchers out there who can get the fastball by you, and it's about timing the fastball. And so he really mentioned how stark the difference from when he started to where baseball is now in his career. And think about Albert Pujols having to make that adjustment as well. It wasn't just Albert Pujols, it was Jordan Montgomery. We had the Subway Series. The Atlanta Braves stay hot, so they pick up a game on the New York Mets in the NL East standings. The Phillies get back on track, and then the Milwaukee Brewers keep pace with the Cardinals. They're able to beat the Dodgers and, in fact, shut out the Dodgers, which doesn't happen very often in LA. Now, coming up, we're going to get to this decision by Matt Rhule to start Baker Mayfield. Not only Baker's reaction to facing his former team, and it's fresh and it's still raw. And we know he's emotional. I don't care how much he tells you he's locked in. It's all business. It's about football.
Don't really care.
BS. It's Baker Mayfield. He acts like a 16-year-old girl some of the time. He's extremely emotional.
And just boo the shit out of him.
There's no way. Now, he may be able to channel those emotions. That's what maturity is all about. You make your emotions work for you instead of allowing your emotions to control you and derail you, but there is absolutely no way that I will ever believe it's just another game for Baker Mayfield. BS. Now, I don't know if he said that or not, but he may have the chance before we get to week number one. And what was Sam Darnold's reaction? Also, I love that some reporter jumped the gun and asked Matt Rhule, well, is Baker the long-term answer? He's not even started a single game for the Panthers yet, but are we going to crown him? The next question will be, are you going to give him a long-term contract? Tom Brady returns to practice. Jameis Winston is getting closer after that torn ACL. And Aaron Rodgers, not only does he love himself, but he wants his young wide receivers to know he loves them too. Tough love. People are coming here to play with me.
People are coming here to play with me.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Let's go back to our phones. Dean is listening in Texas. Dean, welcome to After Hours.
Hi, Amy. It's good to see you again. Talk to you again. I couldn't get you on the radio. I thought your radio program was off. And you asked my favorite moment. Well, years and years ago, I met Steve Garvey.
Okay.
And I'd like to see the Rams make a trade for Terrell Owens.
Oh, well, they don't have to trade for him. He's not currently signed by any team. They could have him if they wanted him.
Oh, I wish I could.
Well, they can. I don't know if they will.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you about that Ram-Texan game. I'm a little bit mad about that because there was a few seconds left in the game, and there was two penalties on the Texans, and it put them down at the two. And just before the play started, they said the game is over.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Penalty.
I'm sorry. What are we talking about right now?
The Ram-Texan game.
A preseason game?
Penalty. I put out about the two, and you can't in a game on a penalty. I know that.
Are we talking about preseason?
Yes.
Oh, you're not really getting that fired up about preseason, are you?
No.
No, please don't. It's not worth your energy. You save your energy for the real season.
Yeah, but the Rams beat the Chargers about that, but I still like to see them in the Super Bowl.
Okay. Again, preseason doesn't count. I don't even watch preseason games to the end, and I definitely do not share scores from preseason games. It's against my religion.
Yeah, and as far as the son watching and Tom Brady, I'm sick of hearing about them being two losers. That's all they talk about all the time.
Well, then you might want to turn off sports radio. Just a suggestion.
Yeah. Were you on vacation or something? I couldn't get you.
Last week?
Yeah.
I did 2 days during the daytime, two shows during the daytime. I did one show here at night, and then I had family visiting, so it was off for two nights.
That one favorite moment was meeting Steve Garvey, and I would like to meet Steve. I'd like to meet Ray Mysterio, President Trump, and I'd like to meet you.
Oh, well, anytime you're in New York City, you just let us know, Dean.
I never go to New York City. I hate that place.
Oh, well, that's where we're located. All right, sir. Good to talk to you. Have a good night. I'm glad you're okay. Nelson is listening in T-Town, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. What's your memorable moment?
My memorable moment was watching Pete Rose tie the all-time hit record at Wrigley Field. And he had one more at bat. And I was behind home plate. And he had a chance to break it, but Lee Smith struck out Pete Rose to end the game.
So this is him tying the hit record?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the date?
He got it. 1985.
Ooh, impressive.
September, because I remember I was in school.
Yes.
I just became a senior. Like September... 6th through the 8th.
It was the 8th. Look at you, Nelson. That's impressive.
Yeah, I can't forget because me and my cousins, we were right behind home plate, and we were just wanting to see history, and it didn't happen.
Well,
we
it did happen. I mean, tying Ty Cobb is impressive, too.
Right. But it was cool.
That's awesome. I'm really impressed that you remember the date, September 8th, 1985 at Wrigley Field.
Oh, all right, cool. I knew what year it was because I was a senior. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 86.
Gotcha. So, well, that's really neat. Thank you for sharing that with us, Nelson.
No worries.
And thank you for listening. Let's talk to Joe, who's in Cleveland. Joe, what's your unforgettable sports milestone or moment?
Hey, how you been, girl?
I've been the same.
I've been waiting for you for an hour and a half.
No, you have not. I've not even been on the air. I haven't been on the air an hour and a half, and I only asked this question 50 minutes ago.
Hey, all right. Anyway, I was in Three River Stadium. First time the Browns won in Three River Stadium. They beat the Steelers 51-0.
Okay.
And
51-0. I definitely don't remember that.
51-0. This is the first time the Browns won in Three Rivers. I walked in the first quarter. Steelers fans were walking out. I'm like, why?
What, you missed it? You missed the first quarter?
I had to drive an hour to get tickets for my uncle, who's a chase collector in another part of Pittsburgh, to give me tickets to the game. He couldn't attend.
Oh.
And I have another one for you.
Okay.
Atlanta Braves.
When I'm still trying to figure out when this happened. Do you remember the date?
I would say it would be about 84, 85, 86.
Actually, it was September 10th, 1989. I love Google.
There you go. I was there, but
you were there, but you missed the beginning.
I missed the best part because I walked in, it was already 30-something-0.
Oh, really? Okay, so the Browns scored 17 points in the first quarter and 13 points in the second quarter. So you didn't walk in until it was 30-0?
I walked in at like something like that, yeah.
You missed a lot.
I missed a lot, but I saw the best because that was the first time they won there.
All right.
But then I was again in Atlanta when the Braves were in the World Series. Well, they were playing Pittsburgh Pirates. And it was a ninth inning, 5-9, seventh game. And Bobby Cox pinch hit a batter named Francisco Cabrera. And he had a 3-2 count with two outs, bases loaded. And the guy hit the shot around the world, man. He won in the left center, scored the runs, won the game. And the Braves went to the World Series. And I also was in Houston when Hakeem Olajuwon won the NBA title.
Gotcha. I mean, you've seen a lot of these milestones.
Oh, I used to travel. I used to sell sportswear. I did a lot of things in my life, but
I hope you don't always show up late.
Pardon me?
I hope you don't always show up late.
Oh, only for the Pittsburgh game because I had to drive an hour to get the tickets.
I got you. Just out of curiosity, which Hakeem Olajuwon championship did you see?
The first one he won.
Gotcha. All right. Mid-90s.
Thank you very much.
I remember those two. Thank you, Joe. Good to have you listening
walk
in Cleveland.
Dog and shake your cat.
Do what? Walk my dog?
Walk your dog and don't forget to shake your cat.
Oh, no. I don't really want to shake the cat. But thank you, Joe. I appreciate the advice on being a pet owner. Okay. You never know what you get. Spice of life with Sports Radio Colors. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We'll get to some of your tweets and your Facebook messages. And it's pretty impressive, the wide array of storylines and memorable moments that you are remembering. But actually, it's kind of cool that I get to look them up on Google so I can see the dates and jog my memory. Or in some cases, it's way before me, so I don't remember it at all. But yeah, this is neat. Again, Twitter, Facebook, phones, us, After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It's unique because we're all pretty young, you know. I mean, Sam and I are the oldest ones in the room, and we're only going into year five, so we're able to compete and kind of bounce ideas off of each other. Just the different systems that we've been in. Obviously, they're learning this one for the first time, too. So compare it, contrast, and just come up with ideas to see the most efficient way to run things and get this team winning.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one, Baker Mayfield, back when he was traded, or more appropriately, when the Browns paid the Panthers to take him. He has now won the battle for Carolina. Matt Rhule naming Baker the starter for week one over Sam Darnold. You will hear from both Matt Rhule as well as GM Scott Fitterer. What's impressive about Baker plus Sam Darnold and his reaction. That's coming up after the update at the bottom of the hour. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What is a memorable, unforgettable sports moment that you are thrilled happened during your lifetime that you had a chance to witness, whether in person or on TV? Maybe you listen to it on the radio. That counts as well. Think about the number of incredible moments that Vin Scully described on the radio in a way that you felt like you were there and watching with your own eyes. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, lots of you weighing in and some pretty awesome memories that either I don't have or wouldn't have ever come up with. Let's see. Kevin says, I can't translate that one. It's two tweets. I'll get back to it. Russ says on Twitter, in person at Anaheim Stadium with my dad the night Nolan Ryan struck out 19 Red Sox. Funniest moment of the game, Carl Yastrzemski dropping to his knees after a called third strike, covering the plate with dirt, immediately ejected, of course. He says August 12th, 1974. Wow, that's the second memorable moment that you all have conjured up from 1974. Let's see, another tweet here. Being at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium when the Braves won the World Series in 1995. That's awesome. Can imagine any type of a championship closeout or a championship celebration is a memory that's seared in your brain. Peter says, listening to Don Larson's perfect game as a schoolboy on the radio. See what I mean? When we talk about radio versus TV, I know it's a completely different experience, but I tell you what, I would just as soon listen to an expert play-by-play announcer on radio sometimes than to watch it on TV. George, seeing Tom Sneevo in the Indy 500 and getting to shake his hand when he was walking down Gasoline Alley going to his garage. I do not know what year that is. Joel says Dale Earnhardt Sr. winning the Daytona 500 in 1998. Yeah, I'll never forget that. I cried and cried. I was so excited. Mark, as a longtime sports fan, I saw Denny McClain win number 30 in 1968 with a walk-off win against the A's. Thank you, Mark. And I know producer Jay is retweeting a lot of these from our show account, After Hours CBS. Richard goes back to the 82 Super Bowl, 49ers versus Bengals. My dad had gone to the very first 49er game in 1946. He suffered through decades of 49er ineptitude. He and I were present at the Pontiac Silverdome when the Niners finally rewarded his fandom. That's cool. This comes from a Falcons fan. I saw Matt Ryan pass for 503 yards and Julio Jones receive for 300 yards in a game against the Panthers back in 2016. The last season at the old Georgia Dome, the atmosphere at that game was electric when Matt and Julio pulled off those accomplishments on that day. Let's see. Ernesto, Eagles beating the Patriots to win Super Bowl 52. Oh, yes. Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. That was obviously one hell of a performance. And then Kel says, I remember when I was a kid, maybe 5 or 6, I was so anxious about Barry Bonds breaking the single season record when he did it. I remember watching the game in the living room through the crack in my door. It was 9 o'clock. I was supposed to be asleep. Al on Twitter, Cal Ripken's 21-31. So his Iron Man streak. And then Jason, as a Niner fan, seeing George Kittle take the tight end receiving yards record, we'll never forget it. Plus, it was the only bright spot of the season. Oh, here's one more. Tristan, I was in the stadium for the 21st and 22nd games of the 22-game win streak for the then Indians, now Cleveland Guardians. Wow, pretty cool. So find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and I'll get to some of your Facebook responses as well. Let's go back to our phones here. Ron is listening in Cleveland. Welcome to After Hours, Ron.
Hey, Amy. Hi. Real quick, yeah, I think the Browns defense is about as anxious to play Mayfield as he is to play the Browns.
Well, I don't know.
There's a lot of people that weren't real happy with him when he left.
Okay, but Baker Mayfield didn't initiate this divorce, though. He would still be a Cleveland Brown if not for the Browns pursuing Deshaun.
I think they were pretty tired of his act. I know a lot of people complained when they got rid of OBJ that that they should have kept him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of hard feelings both ways, but mm-hmm. I got a couple good memories for you.
Okay.
First one, I wasn't there, but this is the obvious one, but Miracle on Ice was unbelievable. I remember watching the the game against Russia and then the gold medal game with my father. Mm. Neither of us are even hockey fans, but we watched every second of those games.
Wow.
It was just so amazing. The feeling of pride, and it just lifted the whole country. I mean, I was like 15 years old. Mm. You could just feel lifting the whole country. It was just a great moment.
Awesome.
And then one other one is my father used to be big into racing. We went to Daytona 500 3 years, and I was at the famous race in 1980 where there was a wreck on the last lap. And Donnie Allison and Cale Yarborough get out of their cars and actually start fist fighting on the infield.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, here comes Richard Petty from the third position, about half lap back, who I was rooting for, came around and won. And I went to three races in my life at Daytona, but I was able to see Richard Petty win one, who's the king. And I that was just a great memory for me. And
awesome.
You know, that's what really brought NASCAR to the forefront. That was one of the first fully live broadcast races on CBS, and it really helped their popularity. So a couple of pretty good moments.
Yes, I was on the planet for Miracle on Ice, but not cognizant of sports or TV or really anything else. So that's what I wish that I had seen, but that's not something that I watched. So that's really cool. I can imagine the thrill that it gave the country, even though, well, and it was just a different era, right? We as a country were not watching it live. It was tape delayed.
Yep.
And so it was not one of those situations like it would be today where everyone already knew the score, like the Olympics today that are in China or Japan or on the other side of the world, right? Because there were no internet searches that you could do. There was no social media that could spoil the results. So totally different.
Things are so different then. I can remember in 1983, you know, I've always been a Cavaliers fan, but I had a second team, the Sixers. And they made a run to the championship that year. And those games were on CBS, and they weren't live. I mean, you had to watch them at 11:30 because so they could play the regular primetime shows. It's just how different
yes.
the popularity of sports, how things have just exploded.
Yes, for sure. Agreed. Well, that's really cool. Ron, thank you so much for joining us
thank
in
you.
Cleveland. 855-212-4227. Marty finds us on Twitter and also goes with the Miracle on Ice. So jealous. Let's see. Cole says, I saw Martin Brodeur break Patrick Waugh's all-time win record in person, St. Patrick's Day, 2009. Another tweet from New Hampshire, Secretariat winning the Triple Crown in 1973. Also something I wish that I had seen. And then Matt goes with one from across the pond. I'm sure he said it like that for you. Troy Deeney scoring a goal from the opposition's penalty to send Watford FC to the championship playoffs in 2013. Check out the YouTube footage. All right, so we got a lot of them on Facebook as well, Twitter or Facebook, and then our phones still, well, not quite full, but still multiple lines lit up. So it's 855-212-4227 to reach us or on our social media. We're glad to have you here as we say farewell to a Monday and morph into a Tuesday. Free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone, AutoZone. You'll hear from Baker Mayfield starting for a second franchise come the 22 season opener.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Extremely excited for this new start in Charlotte. Obviously, I think it's kind of known now, some familiar faces there, some people that I know, and a lot more to meet, and it's just an exciting time for myself and my family, and just this new chapter.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Oh, Baker Mayfield, new chapter, fresh start. We'll see how it goes for Baker when he takes over for the Carolina Panthers, as he was informed and we were informed on Monday. But I just went back in the last few minutes to count the number of starting quarterbacks for the Carolina Panthers. Now, I was thinking all the way back to their Super Bowl season, which was 2015. Remember when Cam won the NFL MVP? I think that was 2015, pretty sure. And he was still the starter for 16, as well as 17, and most of 18. But he had some major injuries that derailed not only his career, but also the Panthers' aspirations. And so I began counting. Here's what I found out. Cam started 14 games in 2018, but Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen also started one game each. That was toward the end of Ron Rivera. In 2019, Kyle Allen was the starter for a dozen games. Remember, Cam Newton got shut down pretty early, and Will Greer started a couple games. Raise your hand if you remember that. Then it was the changeover to Matt Rhule as the head coach, as Ron Rivera was let go and moved on to Washington. In 2020, Teddy Bridgewater was the great hope for the Panthers. PJ Walker started a game that season as well. Then Teddy Bridgewater landed in Denver. The Panthers traded for Sam Darnold, who started 11 games last season, but they also tried to recycle Cam, and PJ Walker started yet another game. Here we go with the 2022 season and yet another starting QB. Although I suppose there's something to be said for Baker being familiar with the constant change. But I tell you all the time, constant change in sports equals constant losing. And this is one major reason why the Panthers have done a whole lot of nothing since that Super Bowl run. Baker will be the eighth starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers in the last 4+ seasons. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Matt Rhule, why Baker Mayfield over Sam Darnold?
I believe in both guys. And I believe in who Sam Darnold is. And I believe in how hard he's worked and how professionally he's been. At the end of the day, we felt like, you know, Baker's made a lot of progress in a short amount of time, kind of in the things I've talked to you guys about. And so we felt like it was right to make that move for this team, you know, right now. I said, hey, when we know, we know. We felt like we knew, and it was time now with the second preseason game done to sort of start to move forward and say, hey, Baker's the quarterback. Sam, you get ready, and kind of go from there.
So Baker, of course, will be starting against the Cleveland Browns in week number one. What a coinky dink. I'm just so impressed by whoever guessed right that Baker would end up in a Panthers uniform. Sam Darnold has said all the right things. Maybe he saw the writing on the wall, but I'm sure he competed as hard as he possibly could. And Baker appreciates the fact that Sam has not made this awkward or difficult, but instead they've pushed each other.
Sam and I knew this day was going to eventually come, but we weren't counting down the days. We didn't know when it was going to happen or anything like that. So I just this morning was made aware that I was going to be starting, and saw Sam shortly after. He made it very clear that anything I needed in support or in terms of that aspect, he was going to be there. And that just shows what kind of team guy he is. Honestly, just an unfortunate circumstance that we're both here in the same year fighting for a job. But that's the kind of guy he is. He said, whatever you need in support, he's just trying to win games. And that's the mentality we've had the whole time. So I truly, truly appreciate that. And he's a great guy.
I think, you know, me and Baker viewed it every day was our game day out there during camp. And, you know, especially as we got into these last couple weeks. Yeah, obviously it didn't go my way. Coach named Baker the starter. And my mindset is it is what it is. And for me right now, I'm going to do everything I can to support Baker. And when the regular season comes around, I'm going to do everything I can to support him and, you know, be ready for when my time comes.
We're hoping that he moves the offense. I mean, I don't want to, you know, make it too simple, but I mean, I think he's a guy that's accurate. He's a guy that's smart. He plays fast. He knows where to go with the ball. He's still adjusting to our mechanics, our footwork. So, you know, I think, you know, making this move now gives him time to really, you know, kind of settle in with some guys. And but he's, you know, a really fast processor. And so, yeah, as much as anything, the chemistry with the receivers is one thing. The chemistry with the center, because Baker goes pretty quick, and he wants to get in the protection calls and get going. So, but there's a lot of work to do. I just felt like this was the time.
Matt Rhule told us it would likely be a decision made after the Panthers preseason game with the Patriots, which happened on Friday. Remember, they had some joint practices before that, and there were lots of brawls. I wish I was a baller. I wish it was a little bit taller. The Panthers need Baker to provide consistency to their offense, but you know what else they need? They need Christian McCaffrey to be healthy. He is that quarterback's best friend. So, yes, Baker's a little bit different flavor, but it was, I thought, for not only Matt Rhule to know he could count on him right away, but to hear the words of GM Scott Fitterer, the part that jumped out to him about Baker Mayfield was not one that I was expecting.
Baker's done a really good job, you know, coming in, you know, really having no mini camp. He had no mini camp at all. He had to learn on his own for those, you know, 2.5-3 weeks that, you know, once we traded for him. And he did. He showed up. He knew a lot of the offense, which shows his work ethic. And then once he got here, he's just immersed himself in this. And, you know, he's one of the first guys in the building in the morning, stays late at night, and he's really working at this. And he's picked it up fairly quickly.
Scott Fitterer on SiriusXM NFL. So not only did Baker jump right in when he had the chance to work with his new teammates, but he was preparing and studying on his own. And it's funny, considering one of the storylines around Kyler Murray, but also this idea that here is Baker yet again having to learn a new offense with new voices in his head, with not only new teammates around him, but new coaches, new coordinators. If there's anything he's familiar with, it would be that. It would be taking what he's learned from a previous coach, a previous offensive coordinator, switching up the terminology and figuring out how it looks different or how it fits into the new system. And so Scott praises him for the fact that he already knew a good portion of the offense, which I think is very impressive. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Matt Rhule was already answering questions about whether or not Baker is going to be the long-term answer for the Panthers at QB.
I'm not going to, you know, talk about guys' futures and all that. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, Scott, Dave, they that's more their job. I'm in the moment right now. I'm thinking about practice to practice, and I want all of our players to know that we support them and believe in them. So Baker's, you know, he's done a lot of things in his career already. That's a lot of accomplishments. I want him to focus purely on football, and I think he will.
Oh, would you like him to focus purely on week number one and facing his former team, the Cleveland Browns?
Right now, I'm just trying to get this schedule down. We're doing kind of a mock game week leading up to this Buffalo Bills game. And when that, you know, that time comes, 3 weeks from now, we're going to handle prepping for Cleveland. Obviously, there's a lot of attachment there. I'm not going to, like I told you guys, Wofford, I'm not going to sit here and be a robot and say that it doesn't mean anything. It will. But right now, all that matters is me and continuing to improve until this regular season starts.
Can that game please be on national TV? Please. Can it please be on national TV? We had a caller from Cleveland a little while ago who indicated that, oh, the defense for Cleveland is also going to want a piece of Baker. I think Baker is the one with the added juice and the added motivation now. Can he channel that adrenaline? Can he channel those emotions? Let's go back to our phones real quick. Dan is in California. Dan, what's your memorable sports moment that you're thrilled you got to see?
Amy, can you hear me okay?
I mean, your phone quality kind of sucks.
I got an old iPhone 6.
Yeah,
so it's,
got you.
They're out at the 14 now, so that tells you something.
Mm.
The call screener can tell you this is the truth. The gentleman from New Hampshire kind of stole my thunder. I was sitting in the family living room and watching Hammer and Hank beat Babe Ruth's home run. And I'll add a little something there. There was a big talk about, you know, it was down in Atlanta and the Deep South and, you know, if there'd be racism or something, you know, since Babe Ruth, he retired in, 35, something like that. So it'd been like 40 years. So nothing of that sort occurred at all. And actually a young man ran with him around the bases, a white young man.
I remember.
So it was a very proud moment for the United States of America. Tell you that.
Actually, I don't remember it because I didn't see it. But I remember hearing the Vin Scully call over and over, even just a couple weeks ago when Vin Scully passed. And then obviously it's an iconic moment that is immortalized in video. And every time there's any big baseball moment or some type of a baseball program with highlights, you always get to see that. So, yeah, it was one of those I wish I had seen myself, but that's really cool that you remember it. 1974, I now know. April 8th, 1974.
Yeah. Hey, can I say a couple real quick?
Yeah, no, you got to go quick because we literally have 15 seconds.
Okay. Bruce Jenner, 1976, Montreal, won the decathlon. Mm-hmm. First American to do it in a long time. And then Bjorn Borg won five straight Wimbledons, I think, ending in 1980. I think
right.
John McEnroe beat him in 81 and beat him in the U.S. Open.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. We have to let you go because we're just to get the top of the hour. That was not 15 seconds, but two big names. Thank you, Dan. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.